The name Rick Hall probably doesn't make bells go off in your head, but the music he produced from his famed studios in the tiny town of Muscle Shoals, Alabama, certainly will. Early on, he produced this song by Percy Sledge. You may also know this song by Etta James, or this one by Aretha Franklin, and this one by Wilson Pickett. They were all produced by Rick Hall at Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. His later credits include The Almonds, Mac Davis, Paul Simon, and the Osmond Brothers, among others. In addition to his memoir, Rick Hall is featured in the documentary film. It's simply titled Muscle Shoals.
Oh, I think they did a grand job. The people that did the thing were professional people. They had done a couple of movies before, and they'd done Avatar, which was a big movie.
Oh, really?
And so the photographer who did all the photography, which I was wild about, because he actually used five cameras in some cases. A lot of times you wonder, well, I look pretty silly, don't I? You know, that kind of thing. And then when you see the movie, it's the first time we saw it edited. We were in Sundance, and we saw it out there the first time. Well, all of us were like oohing and awing, you know, like, geez, I mean, I didn't know we sounded that good and looked that good, you know.
You asked me to give up the hand of a girl I love. You tell me I'm not the man she's worthy of.
Let's go to the beginning. So when you founded the studio, as the movie explains, that there's something that's going on in the river. There's something in Muscle Shoals that maybe comes out of the mud. It comes out of the river. But really, it came out of you.
Well, it came out of the guys with me and the pickers and the songwriters. I'm the producer, of course, and I have the final word on things like that. But I'm going to dismantle all of that about the river, because to me, I think it was because we needed it so bad and we wanted it so bad. If somebody else was working 18 hours a day, we were willing to work 24 hours a day in order to get what we were looking for. And that was a hit record, you know. And so we were hungry. We were hungrier than New York musicians or Los Angeles musicians. And consequently, we had to have it. If we didn't have a hit record, you know, the next phone, you wouldn't get another phone call.
When you founded the studio itself, did you have any idea of that sound you were looking for that became, quote, the Muscle Shoals sound? Or was it just like you said, we just needed a hit record and this is what worked for the situation?
Yeah, we needed a hit song, first of all, because you can cut a great record as a record producer and it won't be a hit unless it's a hit song. So you got to start with a good product. And so the songwriters were a key to a lot of the things we did. And we had some of the best, you know, the George Jacksons and Mickey Buckins, but I can't remember all their names right now. But anyhow,
sure,
that's where you start with a hit song. And then, of course, the producer's idea is to make the song a hit. If you can't do that, you shouldn't be allowed to produce records. My earlier records were all black people, and they cut the movie off in 1972. And, of course, that was the year that I exploded and was doing Mac Davis and Tom Jones and Andy Williams and the Osmonds. And so my big year was I was voted the number one record producer of the world in 1972.
Just keep it friendly, girl, because I don't want to leave. Don't start clinging to me, girl, because I can't breathe.
Why a memoir and why right now?
Well, the memoir is because we wanted, for 10 years it took us to write this book, and we started out as a diary, a daily diary, you know, that we recorded so-and-so today, and I think we got a hit, and blah, 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 and all the the musicians that we played on it and things like that. So we decided when it got 10 years old, it was time to put it into a book.
Okay.
It tells a lot more graphic of who I was, what I was, how I went about my business, how the musicians came to me and so forth, and how they came about going on and having their own studios and doing their own thing. That and the fact that John, I wanted some historical marker, not just because we were ready to lay down the gauntlet, but because we wanted to have some place in history of Muscle Shoals and to let people know that all the records that they heard, like Wilson Pickett's Mustang Sally, Funky Broadway, and Aretha Franklin, and Etta James, and Paul Anka, and all the guys that we had hits on, number one records. In most cases, we had their first hit record, the Mac Davises, the Osmonds, and people like that, and Aretha Franklin even. And so we wanted people to know that they weren't cut in New York, they weren't cut in Miami, Florida, and they weren't cut in California, Los Angeles. They were cut in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, a tiny town of 10,000 people. And I'm sweating like glue, 'cause I ain't never
loved a man the way that I love you. At some point, and I think relatively early on, you were getting some worldwide notoriety for what you were doing. And I'm wondering how the folks in Muscle Shoals itself were viewing what you were doing. Were they aware of what was going on? And at what point did they go, hey, we've got a real jewel here in Muscle Shoals?
No, to answer your question, I will tell you quite honestly that I'm known better in Los Angeles, California, or London, England, than I am in Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
Is that still true?
It's still true.
Really?
It's the most historic movie ever made and the only documentary ever made of Muscle Shoals, the film you saw. And, of course, we kept it a secret for years. I did, because there was a lot of reasons, but one of them was a fear of danger, you know, from people when you're cutting black people in the 60s. And George Wallace is standing in the schoolhouse door and at the University of Alabama, you're a little bit nervous about it, you know, so you don't want every Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes along to come into the studio and start asking questions, you know.
Sure, okay.
And the obvious questions were, of course, why aren't you recording white people?
Mm. Did you run into that at all?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. We integrated a lot of all-night truck stops, because in Muscle Shoals there's not that many places to eat at night. And, of course, that was a dry county back then, so we didn't have any booze. And not that we wanted to drink booze, but so there wasn't a lot of activities going on in Muscle Shoals, except for the fact that you could go to a square dance or go possum hunting.
And I want to go to Etta James. You mentioned Etta earlier. I want to go to Etta, I know you said you loved working with Etta, and she said that she loves working with you. But one of the things she did say was that, yeah, Rick was really a stickler for forgiveness, and I was stubborn, Rick was stubborn, and, you know, I could be a little difficult to work with sometimes, but, you know, it turns out Rick was always right. But it never said what you were right about. Do you have any recollection of some of the things when you were working in the studio with Etta that?
Well, we didn't like the same song. The first song, the hit I cut on her, the owner of the record label, Leonard Chess, came down to Muscle Shoals and spent a week and a half with me while I was recording her album. He was in the hotel and, of course, we'd work all day and then we'd play all night and play our stuff back and rejoice the product we produced during the day. He said, you know, Rick, I built my record label on the back of on her back, and meaning that she'd had a lot of success when she was 14, 15 years old. So when I started doing her, I wanted to get away from that old balladish blues, you know, they call it Stormy Monday and Tuesday's just as bad and that. I wanted to be progressive. I wanted to be bigger than that. I wanted to be somebody special. I didn't want to change the records. I wanted to change the industry and how they went about doing business. And so she argued with me that, tell Mama, she said, oh, I hate this song, Rick. I don't know why you're making me do this song. I hate this damn song, and I'm going to do it one more time, and that's it.
You thought you hadn't found a good girl, one to love you and give you the world.
So I had to convince her, look, this is a hit song, Etta. This will bring you back to prominence, and you won't have to worry about money anymore. That's what she was talking about. Mm. And likely I would, if you put up an argument with me, John, I would say, well, do me a favor. John, hum me your last hit, okay? And that usually shut people up.
That's a great line. I love that.
Didn't have no sense.